Chapter 26. I do not wish to know more, apostrophe said Nay. And would you marry any woman offhand, without being thoroughly acquainted with her circumstances? Apostrophe apostrophe she said, looking at him curiously, and with a little admiration, for his unconscionably phlegmatic treatment of her motives in going to Farnfield, had a not unbecoming daring about it in Ethelberta's eye. I would marry a woman offhand, when that woman is you. I would make you mine this moment did I dare, or, to speak with absolute accuracy, within 24 hours. Do assent to it, dear Mrs. Peterwin, and let me be sure of you forever. I'll drive to Doctor's Commons this minute, and meet you tomorrow morning at 9 in the church just below. It is a simple impulse, but I would adhere to it in the coolest moment. Shall it be arranged in that way, instead of our waiting through the ordinary routine of preparation? I am not a youth now, but I can see the bliss of such an act as that, and the contemptible nature of methodical proceedings beside it. Apostrophe apostrophe, he had taken her hand. Ethelberta gave it a subtle movement backwards to imply that he was not to retain the prize, and said, one whose inner life is almost unknown to you, and whom you have scarcely seen except at other people's houses. Apostrophe apostrophe, we know each other far better than we may think at first, apostrophe said Nay. We are not people to love in a hurry, and I have not done so in this case. As for worldly circumstances, the most important items in a marriage contract are the persons themselves, and, as far as I am concerned, if I get a lady fair and wise I care for nothing further. I know you are beautiful, for all London owns it. I know you are talented, for I have read your poetry and heard your romances. And I know you are politic and discreet apostrophe, for I have examined your property, apostrophe said she, with a weak smile. Nay bowed. And what more can I wish to know? Come, shall it be? Apostrophe apostrophe, certainly not tomorrow. Apostrophe apostrophe, I would be entirely in your hands in that matter. I will not urge you to be precipitate, I could not expect you to be ready yet. My suddenness perhaps offended you, but, having thought deeply of this bright possibility, I was apt to forget the forbearance that one ought to show at first in mentioning it. If I have done wrong, forgive me. Apostrophe apostrophe, I will think of that, apostrophe said Ethelberta, with a cooler manner. But seriously, all these words are nothing to the purpose. I must remark that I prize your friendship, but it is not for me to marry now. You have convinced me of your goodness of heart and freedom from unworthy suspicions. Let that be enough. The best way in which I in my turn can convince you of my goodness of heart is by asking you to see me in private no more. Apostrophe apostrophe, and do you refuse to think of me as? Why do you treat me like that, after all? Apostrophe apostrophe said Nay, surprised at this want of harmony with his principle, that one convert to matrimony, could always find a second ready-made. I cannot explain, apostrophe said she, impatiently. I would not explain, not marry. I don't love anybody, and I have no heart left for beginning. It is only honest in me to tell you that I am interested in watching another man's career, though that is not to the point either, for no close relationship with him is contemplated. But I do not wish to speak of this any more. Do not press me to it. Apostrophe, certainly I will not, apostrophe said Nay, seeing that she was distressed and sorrowful. But do consider me and my wishes. I have a right to ask it, for it is only asking a continuance of what you have already begun to do. Tomorrow I believe I shall have the happiness of seeing you again. Apostrophe apostrophe, she did not say no, and long after the door had closed upon him, she remained fixed in thought. How can he be blamed for his manner, apostrophe she said, after knowing what I did? Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta as she sat, felt herself much less a Peterwin than a Chickerel, much less a poetess richly freighted with fancy than an adventuress with a nebulous prospect. Ney was one of the few men whose presence seemed to attenuate her dignity in some mysterious way to its very least proportions. And that act of espial, which had so quickly and inexplicably come to his knowledge, helped his influence still more. She knew little of the nature of the town bachelor. There were opaque depths in him which her thoughts had never definitely plumbed. Notwithstanding her exaltation to the atmosphere of the Petherwin family, Ethelberta was very far from having the thoroughbred London woman's knowledge of sets, grades, coteries, cliques, forms, glosses, and niceties, particularly on the masculine side. Setting the years from her infancy to her first look into town against those linking that epoch with the present, the former period covered not only the greater time, but contained the mass of her most vivid impressions of life and its ways. But in recognizing her ignorance of the ratio between words to women, and deeds to women in the ethical code of the bachelor of the club, she forgot that human nature in the gross differs little with situation, and that a gift which, if the germs were lacking, no amount of training in clubs and coteries could supply, was mother wit like her own. 27. Mrs. Belmain's Cripplegate Church, Ney's remark, that he believed he should see Ethelberta again the next day referred to a contemplated pilgrimage of an unusual sort which had been arranged for that day by Mrs. Belmain upon the ground of an incidental suggestion of Ethelberta's. One afternoon in the week previous they had been chatting over tea at the house of the former lady, Ney being present as a casual caller, when the conversation was directed upon Milton by somebody opening a volume of the poet's works that lay on a table near. Milton, thou shouldst be living at this hour. England hath need of the apostrophe, said Mrs. Belmain with the degree of flippancy which is considered correct for immortal verse, the Bible, God, etc., in these days. And Ethelberta replied, lit up by a quick remembrance, it is a good time to talk of Milton, for I have been much impressed by reading the IF, and I have decided to go and see his tomb. Could we not all go? We ought to quicken our memories of the great, and of where they lie, by such a visit occasionally. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we ought, apostrophe, said Mrs. Belmain. And why shouldn't we? Apostrophe, apostrophe, continued Ethelberta, with interest. To Westminster Abbey? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Belmain, a common man of 30, younger than his wife, who had lately come into the room. No, to where he lies comparatively alone, Cripplegate Church. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I always thought that Milton was buried in Poet's Corner, apostrophe, said Mr. Belmain. So did I, apostrophe, said Ney, but I have such an indifferent head for places, that my thinking goes for nothing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, it would be a pretty thing to do, apostrophe, said Mrs. Belmain, and instructive to all of us. If Mrs. Petherwin would like to go, I should. We can take you in the carriage, and call round for Mrs. Doncastle on our way, and set you both down again coming back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that would be excellent, apostrophe, said Ethelberta. There is nowhere I like going to, so much as the depths of the city. The absurd narrowness of world-renowned streets is so surprising, so crooked, and shady as they are too, and full of the quaint smells of old cupboards and cellars. Walking through one of them reminds me of being at the bottom of some crevice or gorge, the proper surface of the globe being the tops of the houses. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you will come to take care of us, John? And you, Mr. Ney, would like to come? We will tell Mr. Ladywell that he may join us, if he cares to, apostrophe, said Mrs. Belmain. Oh yes, apostrophe, said her husband quietly, and Ney said he should like nothing better, after a faint aspect of apprehension at the remoteness of the idea from the daily track of his thoughts. Mr. Belmain observing this, and mistaking it for an indication that Ney had been dragged into the party against his will by his overhasty wife, arranged that Ney should go independently, and meet them there at the hour named, if he chose to do so, to give him an opportunity of staying away. Ethelberta also was by this time doubting if as he had not been too eager with her proposal. To go on such a sentimental errand might be thought by her friends to be simply troublesome, their adherence having been given only in the regular course of complaisance. She was still comparatively an outsider here, her life with Lady Petherwin having been passed chiefly in alternations between English watering places and continental towns. However, it was too late now to muse on this, and it may be added that from first to last Ethelberta never discovered from the Belmains whether her proposal had been an infliction or a charm, so perfectly were they practiced in sustaining that complete divorce between thinking and saying which is the hallmark of high civilization. But, however she might doubt the Belmains, as he had no doubt as to Nay's true sentiments. The time had come when he, notwithstanding his air of being oppressed by almost every lively invention of town and country for charming griefs to rest, would not be at all oppressed by a quiet visit to the purlieus of St. Giles, Cripplegate, since she was the originator, and was going herself. It was a bright hope-inspiring afternoon in this mid-May time, when the carriage containing Mr. and Mrs. Belmain, Mrs. Doncastle, and Ethelberta, crept along the encumbered streets towards Barbican, till turning out of that thoroughfare into Red Cross Street they beheld the bold shape of the old tower they sought, clothed in every neutral shade, standing clear against the sky, dusky and grim in its upper stage, and hoary gray below, where every corner of every stone was completely rounded off by the waves of wind and storm. All people were busy here. Our visitor seemed to be the only idle persons the city contained, and there was no dissonance there never is between antiquity and such beehive industry. For pure industry, in failing to observe its own existence and aspect, partakes of the unobtrusive nature of material things. This intramural stir was a flywheel transparent by excessive motion, through which Milton and his day could be seen, as if nothing intervened. Had there been ostensibly harmonious accessories, a crowd of observing people in search of the poetical, conscious of the place and the scene, what a discord would have arisen there. But everybody passed by Milton's grave except Ethelberta and her friends, and for the moment the city's less invidious conduct appeared to her more respectful as a practice than her own. But she was brought out of this rumination by the halt at the church door, and completely reminded of the present, by finding the church open, and Nay the, till yesterday, an impassioned Nay waiting in the vestibule to receive them, just as if he lived there. Lady Well had not arrived. It was a long time before Ethelberta could get back to Milton again, for Nay was continuing to impend over her future more and more visibly. The objects along the journey had distracted her mind from him, but the moment now was as a direct renewal and prolongation of the declaration time yesterday, and as if in furtherance of the conclusion of the episode. They all alighted and went in, the coachman being told to take the carriage to a quiet nook further on, and return in half an hour. Mrs. Belmain and her carriage some years before had accidentally got jammed crosswise in Cheapside through the clumsiness of the man, in turning up a side street, blocking that great artery of the civilized world for the space of a minute and a half, when they were pounced upon by half a dozen policemen, and forced to back ignominiously up a little slit between the houses, where they did not mean to go, amid the shouts of the hindered drivers. And it was her nervous recollection of that event which caused Mrs. Belmain to be so precise in her directions now. By the time that they were grouped around the tomb, the visit had assumed a much more solemn complexion than anyone among them had anticipated. Ashamed of the influence that she discovered Nay to be exercising over her, and opposing it steadily, Ethelberta drew from her pocket a small edition of Milton, and proposed that she should read a few lines from Paradise Lost. The responsibility of producing a successful afternoon was upon her shoulders. She was, moreover, the only one present who could properly manage blank verse, and this was sufficient to justify the proposal. She stood with her head against the marble slab just below the bust, and began a selected piece, nay standing a few yards off on her right looking into his head in order to listen accurately. Mr. and Mrs. Belmaine and Mrs. Doncastle seating themselves in a pew directly facing the monument. The ripe warm colors of afternoon came in upon them from the west, upon the sallow piers and arches, and the infinitely deep brown pews beneath, the aisle over Ethelberta's head being in misty shade through which glowed a lurid light from a dark-stained window behind. The sentences fell from her lips in a rhythmical cadence one by one, and she could be fancied a priestess of him before whose image she stood, when with a vivid suggestiveness she delivered here, not many yards from the central money mill of the world, yet out from the very tomb of their author, the passage containing the words, Mammon let them on, Mammon, the least erected spirit that fell from heaven. When she finished reading Ethelberta left the monument, and then each one present strayed independently about the building, Ethelberta turning to the left along the passage to the south door. Nay, from whose usually apathetic face, and eyes there had proceeded a secret smoldering light as he listened and regarded her followed in the same direction, and vanished at her heels into the churchyard, whither as he had now gone. Mr. and Mrs. Belmaine exchanged glances, and instead of following the pair they went with Mrs. Doncastle into the vestry, to inquire of the person in charge for the register of the marriage of Oliver Cromwell, which was solemnized here. The church was now quite empty, and its stillness was as a vacuum into which an occasional noise from the street overflowed, and became rarefied away to nothing. Something like 5 minutes had passed, when a hansom stopped outside the door, and Lady Will entered the porch. He stood still, and, looking inquiringly round for a minute or two, sat down in one of the high pews, as if under the impression that the others had not yet arrived. While he sat here, Nay reappeared at the south door opposite, and came slowly in. Lady Well, in rising to go to him, saw that Ney's attention was engrossed by something he held in his hand. It was his pocketbook, and Ney was looking at a few loose flower petals which had been placed between the pages. When Lady Well came forward, Ney looked up, started, and closed the book quickly, so that some of the petals fluttered to the ground between the two men. They were striped, red and white, and appeared to be leaves of the Harlequin rose. Ah, here you are, Lady Well, he said, recovering himself. We had given you up. My aunt said that you would not care to come. They are all in the vestry. How it came to pass that Ney designated those in the vestry as all, when there was one in the churchyard, was a thing that he himself could hardly have explained, so much more had it to do with instinct than with calculation. Never mind them, don't interrupt them, said Lady Well. The plain truth is that I have been very greatly disturbed in mind, and I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.